You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 58, Game of Captain's Chairs. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including Neil deGrasse Tyson and whether the original 1701 is the best starship ever created, the TNG Season 1 Blu-ray price drop and the preview of Season 2, the launch of Star Trek Online Season 6, Hallmark's 2012 and 2013 ornaments, and we delve into the Star Trek 2013 title debate and try to figure out just what reservation JJ is keeping the cast and crew on. Then in the feature, we're joined by Brian Finifter and Michael Fisher to discuss In a Mirror Darkly. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, I'm not sure. Frankly, Chris, I've had about 3 hours of sleep in the past 2 days, and I'm not sure who I am or what reality that I'm in right now.
Are you having difficulties? Maybe you need Troy to float out into space and find the aliens that are preventing you from sleeping?
That actually could be the solution. Typically, sending Troy into space would be the solution to most of my problems. So, yeah, sure. She can give it a shot.
Oh, I'm just picturing you beaming Troy out into space. For listeners who don't know, I receive constant iMessages from Greg throughout the week as he watches episodes saying, you know, this would be an excellent chance to write so-and-so off the show. It's most often Picard, but it could be other people. I think you even wanted to write Nurse Ogawa off the show recently.
There was a chance to write Nurse Ogawa. I mean, now that I'm watching DS9, I'm looking for chances to write these people off. I've actually found several very good chances to write Jake off the show. And I don't know why they haven't taken... I mean, they go to the Gamma Quadrant. They're attacked by the Dominion. They could easily put Jake on a ship that just, you know, explodes in a ball of flame.
But who's going to write news for the Federation Newswire once the war starts if Jake's not around?
This is very true.
All right, Greg. Well, let's jump in. We've got several iTunes reviews this week, and we've got some mailbag this week as well. And why don't we jump in with the iTunes reviews? Okay. Now, we have one from... First off, listeners, if you are outside the United States and you leave us an iTunes review, please send us a heads up, because it's the way Apple works, it's really difficult. You have to go to actually each individual store in order to see the reviews. There's no like a global system for that. And I mainly keep an eye on the US store, because that's where most of our listeners post, even though I'm not in the US myself. So it's not any kind of American bias thing or anything. It's just logistics. And So I went to the UK store and actually found that on July 5th, Michael Clark left us a 5-star review, Greg. Wow. And Michael says, a very enjoyable Star Trek experience. The Ready Room is a must for all Star Trek fans. Each week, Chris and Greg pick an episode, break it down whether it's good or bad. Most of all, they make you want to go back and watch it again. The podcast is very funny. Notice things that perhaps we don't and bring it alive. They bring the latest news on all things Star Trek with their own special twist on things. Some very enjoyable guests each week, and the podcast is produced to a very high standard. Great work. I recommend this to all. Time for a barrel roll. So say we all. Live long and prosper, Michael.
Oh, that's great. Good to hear that.
So we definitely, I think, put our own twist on it, although sometimes that twist is quite bizarre.
That's true. Sometimes we get a little off track with things, but...
No.
What I like about what he said was how we encourage people to go back and watch the show again, because that's really what I love. I love people... We're encouraged to go back and watch an episode of Star Trek that maybe they hadn't seen in a couple of years and pop it in and watch it with fresh eyes.
Yeah, exactly. Because every time I watch, even preparing for the show, I see these things and, you know, and I've seen the episode so many times. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad that that works for the listeners as well.
Yeah.
Now, next up, Greg. So thank you, Michael, for that review. We really appreciate it. And next up, Greg, we have... a review from someone named Charlene Schmidt, I think it's pronounced. Charlene Schmidt.
Sharon. Charmaine?
Yeah, Cheryl? Charmaine, I think it is. Charmaine Schmidt. I think I've heard of her. Wasn't she in the Peanuts with Charlie Brown?
So.
I thought so.
What did Charmaine say?
Charmaine says, whether it's news, in-depth analysis, or silly fun, this podcast does it all. You won't find better quality, both in sound and in content. Chris and Greg are top-notch hosts, and their roster of guests are always entertaining. And I'm not just saying that because I've been on the show. I'm talking about the other guys. Definitely add this to your podcast regimen if you enjoy Star Trek.
Oh, I think I remember this Sharon. I think I remember her. She has been on a show or two of ours. Always going on and on about how much she loves Harry Kim.
Oh, that's her. Oh, yes. Now I know. She's the girl on Twitter. Her name is Harry Kim Fan. Right?
Yes. Harry Kim Fan 47. Not the first one to come up with that name.
Well, in all seriousness, thank you, Charlene, for the review. We do appreciate it.
Yes, very much so.
And you may be a little biased, but we appreciate it nonetheless. All right. And then we have one more, Greg, from someone named XREX, which is either X-Rex or Zrex or something like that. I'm not sure. I'm picturing a Gorn here, actually.
X-Rex. Yeah, I don't know what an X-Rex would be, but it sounds pretty awesome.
Maybe they're those guys in the Voyager episode Distant Origin. Were those the X-Rexes, the dinosaurs?
It could very possibly be, yes. The descendants of dinosaurs. All right.
That's right. Well, X-Rex also gave us 5 stars and just writes, great podcast. I've been learning more Star Trek in this podcast. They keep me informed with news and variety. Star Trek, it's way beyond movies and TV shows, and you guys teach that to us each week. All right. Well, thank you, X-Rex, for that. And just remember that some of those things that we're teaching you each week are not necessarily considered canon.
That's true. I saw a tweet from one of our friends this week talking about how it gets a little confused at times between when we're telling the truth and when we're simply making things up. And yes, we tend to leave that to you, dear listener, to determine the difference. But yeah, sometimes it may be hard to tell the difference at times.
Yeah, I think that was Drew who said that.
I think
that,
so.
That the intonation in our voices, he just can't tell when we're kidding or not kidding. And like you said, Greg, on Twitter, you know, you just believe everything you say is true. And
that's pretty much it, yeah.
As George Costanza says, it's not a lie if you believe it. That's pretty much how we operate around here on the Ready Room. All right, and we've received so many tweets from people through the week, Greg, and so it's not really possible to talk about all the tweets, but there was just one tweet that I did want to point out. The other day, our listener and follower, Celeste, sent us a tweet. Actually, she didn't send it to us. She sent it to the whole world, and she said, thanks to Trek FM and their Ready Room, I find myself saying, do a barrel roll, and so say we all. At random times.
That's great. I say, so say we all, very often. A friend of mine just finished watching all 4 seasons of Battlestar Galactica in about a month, actually. So she's taken to saying, you know, she actually, instead of saying, oh my God, she actually says, oh my gods, without meaning to.
That's good.
So, yes, I've been doing a lot of that. And yes, the barrel roll. I mean, the barrel roll gets you out of pretty much any bad situation that you need. So it's good to have that one in your back pocket.
I had a really tough weekend this weekend, and I did a barrel roll right out to the train station last night. So
nice.
Got myself right out of that. All right. And we have one mailbag item. And actually, I have to issue a correction. I made a mistake last week. I actually think I kind of made a half mistake where I kind of mixed up two of our listeners in my head a little bit. Just because of the name. So last week I talked about a letter that our listener Rebecca wrote. And then I think I said our listener Rebecca, also known as Mares. And actually, Mares is our listener Renee.
Right.
So Rebecca and Renee are different people. And Mares is Renee. And so last week's letter was from Rebecca. And Renee writes, by any other name. Hi, guys. I just listened to Idiot Savant Field. It was great. You unwittingly did Rebecca a disservice, though, by confusing her with me. Maress is me. Rebecca wrote a splendid email, and I wouldn't want to steal any credit from her. Ben and Charlene were great, and you all had me in stitches. Non Sequitur was not one of my favorites, but it was nice to see Harry get his own episode. I guess I'd give it a 5.5. Well, I have to turn in now, so have a great weekend. Talk to you soon. Cheers, Renee, a.k.a. Maress. So she didn't go for the 6.5.
Yeah, apparently she wasn't astonished with it. It was just a pretty good episode, so it gets a 5.5. That's reasonable.
Which on Dork Trek would be slightly more than it's an episode,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's an episode. It's like a 5. It's fantastic. It's like a 6.5. So you look at the scale and judge from there.
So again, I apologize, Rebecca and Renee, for mixing you guys up. I'll just blame it again on lack of sleep.
And all the Romulan ale.
So, Greg, let's move on into actual news. And what do we have up first this week?
Well, today we actually have a really interesting article comes to us courtesy of Neil deGrasse Tyson, who I think most of our listeners will be aware of him as being the current kind of poster child for science, especially among internet people, which I guess is most people nowadays. Pretty much every time he talks, people are listening, people are retweeting, people are blogging and tumbling and all of the things they do. And he spoke out this week on... not a typical science topic, something I wasn't really expecting him ever to talk about.
Yeah, so he spoke up about, he was talking about various ships, I guess. Like he was talking about X-Wing fighters and the Millennium Falcon and Colonial Vipers and so forth from other series. And he went on into Star Trek and essentially he said that the original Enterprise was the most astonishing, awesome, beautiful, seductive spaceship. So I think not only is he saying the original Enterprise was the best Enterprise, but it was actually the best starship.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it sounds like from this, which I have to pretty much agree with him with the things he said at Comic-Con. You look at all these different starships. I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot to look at. There's the Battlestar Galactica. There's, I mean, other ships in Star Trek. There's the things in Star Wars. And there's other stuff. You look at Firefly or trying to think of all these. I mean, there's a lot of shows that have had spaceships. And then there's real life spaceships.
Don't forget Spaceballs.
There's all of the things in Spaceballs that were quite memorable. I tried to sit down and watch Spaceballs the other day. I'm sure in its time, it was a very funny movie that's very enjoyable.
Oh, Spaceballs is wonderful, Greg.
I'm sure, anyway, I shouldn't talk about old movies because I apparently just don't like old movies. And my definition of old movie is like pre-1998. So I should just probably not even talk about movies. But I was watching this episode of Enterprise, which features a Constitution-class starship. And yeah, it is a nice ship. It is a beautiful ship.
Yeah, I agree. And you can look at the later Enterprises, and you might prefer one of the later Enterprises over the original Enterprise. You know, a lot of fans do. But all of those later Enterprises are evolutions of this original Constitution-class ship.
Right.
So this is the blueprint for everything else. And so, yeah, I guess I would agree with him in that case that it probably is, at least within science fiction, the greatest spaceship, starship design that we've ever had. Of course, I say within science fiction, as if there's a lot of other starships flying around us all the time.
Well, I mean, they're not starships, but there are real life spaceships. I think the space shuttle does look pretty awesome. You know, you look at it in Archer's ready room, and he's got the original Enterprise, and then the space shuttle, and then the NX-01, and it looks nice there up on the wall. But it's not a starship. You can't get to the next star over, so it doesn't really count.
That's right, yeah. I like the end of that line, which is usually not seen on camera, but where he has the Enterprise rent-a-car. Right. I think they were stretching a little bit there.
A little bit, yeah. Just not quite enough things called Enterprise to fill the entire wall.
That's right. All right. So let us know what you think. You know, hit us up on Twitter, username TrekFM, or go to trek.fm/contact and let us know what you think about Neil deGrasse Tyson's view of the Enterprise and if you think it's the best or not. Or go to the show page for this show and drop it down there in the comments.
Actually, Chris, did you see this week? I believe it's a magazine in... I think it was a magazine in the UK, has a pullout poster featuring two scale models of like pretty much every starship, from the Star Destroyer to the Enterprise to the Galactica. And they're all original photographs of models that someone hand built, and it has them all to scale. It's really cool. I should try to find that and put in the show notes for everybody. It always is really cool to see like the Star Destroyer is like twice as long as the Enterprise D.
Now, is that a new poster? I've seen something like that before, but maybe the one I saw was just people taking clips of.
I see a lot that are like Photoshopped, or they'll grab stuff. What I liked about this one is that they were all hand-built models that were well lit, and they'd really done the research to make sure they were to scale. I've seen a lot of them where the Star Destroyer's too big or too small, and just didn't look very good. But this was very, it looked like, is very proper, and it was something I would actually put up on my wall.
All right. You'll stick it over there next to your Libby figure.
Yes, I will.
All right. Well, Greg, we finally had some good news this week about the Next Generation remastered project. A couple of things. Of course, the season 2 trailer came out. I guess we'll talk about that first. Now, you've seen the trailer by now and some of the clips from various episodes. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like I just watched Next Generation on the big screen.
Oh, that's true.
Last night.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right.
No, I will have. I'm still waiting. Tomorrow's the big day, and then the day after is the release. I guess this episode will come out on the day that season one is being released. So I'm glad that already we're seeing this trailer for season two, which I think I messaged you, has me really, really excited. There's some bits about season two I don't love. The trailer includes a little clip from Dr. Pulaski, but there are some really great moments in that. And seeing them after only seeing season one stuff remastered, I was on the edge of my seat watching the season two trailer.
Yeah, it is nice to see as the show matures a bit into season two, both in the set design, just the overall look and feel of the show.
Right.
Seeing that remastered is very exciting for me as well. Now, I really loved in this trailer, the beginning of the trailer shows you clips from the episodes. And then the second half of the trailer shows you scenes from this roundtable discussion that they had with most of the TNG cast. Now, they do have Gates there rather than Diane Mulder.
Right.
So it's full season two cast.
Yeah, I feel like it was actually more of a season one get together. They did it pretty recently. And I saw it being promoted as something to promote season one, but because they just did it, it's not making it onto the season one Blu-ray. But yeah, I did notice that Gates is there instead of Diane Mulder. But they have Will Wheaton's there, even. I don't know if they let him talk, but they actually got Will Wheaton there. So this will be really fun to see everybody together talking about it. I don't know how often this happens. I can't imagine you get the entire cast together and interview them. But once every couple years, several years.
I remember at the TNG panel from, was it Calgary, where they had everyone, the 25th anniversary recently?
Yeah.
I watched the whole video from that. And I think that the cast mentioned in there that they all get together, I want to say they said about once a year or so. Now, that's not all official, of course.
Right. You know,
the cameras aren't always rolling.
There's no panning shots as they're, you know, having dinner together.
But they still, you know, after 25 years, they still all get together from time to time. They stay in close touch with each other, which doesn't seem to happen with any of the other series.
Yeah. Although I do hear that the DS9 cast gets together to take yoga from Jadzia from time to time.
Well, I wouldn't you?
They have to rent out a very big room, though, because the cast is so gigantic. But yes, I would be there.
Oh, they have the whole extended cast is there, yes. Right?
Andrew Robinson's in the back doing stretches.
Including Dirty Vedic.
The Dirty Vedic shows up. Right? Jeffrey Combs shows up like four different times.
We're like, where's Jeffrey? And then he wanders back in the room as someone else.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm picturing this TNG cast sit down where every time Will Wheaton tries to say something, everyone yells, "Shut up, Wesley!"
I'm sure they do.
Just for fun, right?
Let's see. So there's this really fun looking get together with everybody. I also heard about one special feature. They're talking about an extended version of Measure of a Man. I believe it was the director of the episode. He tweeted or blogged or something that he had been requested by CBS to if he had a copy of the original cut. That's a longer, right? Like 15 minutes longer than the original cut or than the aired cut.
Yeah, I was thinking it was maybe even 20 minutes, but it's right. 15 to 20 minute range. Well, it should be interesting. Now, generally with those types of things, when you watch them, you see why it was cut. Mm-hmm. Their example for me is what is the episode of Battlestar Galactica where they have the extended version on the DVDs and it's like half an hour longer?
There's a couple of those. You're talking about Pegasus, which I love the extended Pegasus.
Do you?
But I could see it's a lot of... Well, they call it shoe leather that's put back in. It's a lot of just extra moments. It's not like it's whole scenes put back in. It just takes us longer to get from A to B in a single scene.
Yeah, it's Pegasus that I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
And I remember watching Pegasus, and after we watched it, we were like, yeah, I see why they cut it down.
Yeah.
Because I felt like the extended cut just dragged and had a lot of stuff that just wasn't really needed in there. So we'll see what comes out with Measure of a Man, but it'll definitely be interesting to see.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm also, we still haven't gotten our season one sets. I'm hearing some people are getting them actually this weekend somehow.
I saw someone tweet that they got it like yesterday or the day before yesterday.
So people are already watching them. I was planning on just going to the store on Tuesday and picking one up. I didn't actually pre-order, but I'm glad I didn't because now there's been a price drop, apparently.
Oh, there has. But now, Greg, didn't you learn your lesson from The Next Level Blu-ray where you also decided to go by the store and you traveled all over Seattle looking for a copy?
And I found like the one copy. But I figured this is the season disc set. This isn't a special limited run. Certainly, right? This has to be easily available in stores.
Yeah, probably will be. But like you said, there has been a price drop. Now, I'd like to think that all of our constant complaining and whining and moaning about the price had some influence on this, even though I'm sure that it did not. Although it could be, though, that the collective moaning of the fan community had an impact on this. There's been kind of like a little price war going on, I guess, between Amazon, Walmart, and Best Buy. And one of them, I think it was Walmart, but I'm not sure, one of them lowered the price again recently, and then Amazon lowered to match and got it down to $59.99. Yeah. And that, I think, is a very reasonable price point for a full season Blu-ray set.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, $40 for a DVD, $60 for a Blu-ray, that's right in line with what I expect to pay.
Right. And so I saw it and I said, you know, I guess I'll pull the trigger on it. First, I said, let me go to Amazon.com and see if they will ship this to Japan because, you know, as I've talked about before, a lot of times now they won't.
Right.
I put it in my shopping cart. I didn't get an error message, so it was okay. And of course, with the fact that the dollar has almost no value anymore means that for me, $59.99 translates into about $35 for me, $34. Seriously, I'm not joking.
No, I absolutely understand. I know. It's astonishing, but...
So I put it in, and then in my shopping cart, I get two things from Amazon. So Amazon.com, I have it set to just show me prices in yen. Mm-hmm. So it said 4,896 yen. Mm-hmm. Then it says promotion applied minus 1,632 yen. Promotion applied minus 1,632 yen. Twice. So wow. I don't know what these promotions are, but I did not protest. So my total after 2-day global priority shipping, my total came to 2,773 yen, which is $34.
Wow.
So the actual box set, and half of that is shipping. So the box set for me came out to about $12 or $14. So I'm really happy, and it's going to be on its way to me.
Wow.
I'm not paying the $350 price to get it from Amazon Japan.
Wow, somebody out there...
We will be able to talk about it.
Somebody out there is looking out for you, Chris. I don't know who or what or why, but Argyle's in there. He's turning some levers to make stuff happen for you with Amazon.
I think Argyle went over to Amazon and took some of his gin that he makes in the Jefferies tubes. And,
there you go.
But I'm always nice to the prophets. And so I think also the prophets are looking out for me on this one. They want to make sure that we can talk about these remastered TNG episodes on the Ready Room.
Absolutely.
Okay, Greg. Well, let's move on to the next story here. For Star Trek Online fans, we have really big news that the long-awaited Season 6 Under Siege has officially launched, and it looks like a big update for STO players.
Nice. Yeah. Every time they release an update like this, I get an extra urge to jump in and figure out, what's going on in the world. It looks amazing from all the trailers I see. I'm listening to our new podcast, Deck 8. Now from Colin, and it's really making me excited to get back into it. Now is Season 6, have they finally grown the beard, or did that happen several seasons ago?
I think they grew the beard in STO Season 3, Growing the Beard, hence the name.
There you go.
No, I think, yeah, when would STO grow the beard? I don't know. I'd probably say like around season 3 or 4 when the game really started getting deeper and deeper. If you watch these trailers, like you said, in these trailers now, the game looks so incredibly deep that I almost feel like if I jump into it now, I will be lost in this universe because it stretches across the quadrants even.
Yeah, I hope there's still stuff for new players to do, because now they're talking about fleet level missions where you're going to have like 5 starships go into battle together to fight, like, I guess high level bosses is the way you'd think of it in typical MMO speak. Yeah, I hope there's still an intro to it. I just want my little science vessel where I'm a commander, but I'm still captaining, and I've got a little, I just want to, whatever the Star Trek equivalent of, hitting bears with a stick from World of Warcraft, I want to still be able to do that. I don't want to be fighting the Borg quite yet.
So you're just going to be in your little Oberth class ship out in the far reaches of the Beta Quadrant,
yes,
where there's no hostile enemy anywhere around.
Just let me scan some nebulas and map some binary systems and spend some time with the Trill Ensign. I don't need a whole big battle right now. Not yet.
I see this. Captain Harbin, he catalogs gaseous anomalies by day. He spends nights on the holodeck with the Trill Ensign.
Yes. Now, she's not a holographic Trill Ensign. She's not like my Canadian girlfriend. She's a real Trill Ensign, but she comes with me on the holodeck.
I see. But you're always running that program, right? So that you can say, prepare for ramming speed.
Right. That is something that Worf taught me.
Oh, that's in the First Contact simulation,
yes,
isn't it? Yes, yes.
Yes. Oh, Worf, you're so helpful in both battle and in bed.
That's right. People think that Worf was saying that because it's his, Klingon warrior side, right, but actually it's something he picked up from Riker during those poker games. Oh, all right. Well, but yeah, STO Season 6 looks phenomenal. When I watch it, I do also want to go jump in. I have no time to get that deep into the game, unfortunately, because I can see that I would get lost in the game. But if you want to know more about it, there's all kinds of enhancements to the game. And go over to trek.fm/D8. That's the page for our new show, which Greg mentioned, Deck 8. And that's hosted by Colin and Tom. And in the latest episode, which will be, well, by the time this Ready Room drops, the next episode will be coming out for Deck 8. But go to trek.fm/D82, that will be the episode where they really break down season 6 of STO and tell you everything that you can expect and give you some tips and so forth. So
awesome.
go check that out.
Now, and then next season, of course, will be the season where you meet your long-lost grandmother's uncle's girlfriend's dog.
That's right.
So you can look forward to season 7 as well.
STO season 7, family.
Right.
Okay, well, what else do we have up in news, Greg?
Well, we have the holiday season quickly coming upon us, as of course it's July, which means only like 5 months till Christmas. But right. That does mean that Hallmark is starting to talk about their ornaments, which they do some amazing stuff with ornaments every year. I remember my family would get one ornament every year, and we tried to make it something emblematic of the year. So to the 1995, I think it was even before the show premiered, we had a Voyager ornament on the tree that December. So it's always great to see what they release. And there's quite a selection that they've announced this year.
Yeah, there is. They announced what they're releasing this year for the 2012 collection. And also at Comic-Con in San Diego, they gave a sneak peek of what they have coming up for 2013 as well. And there's some
very
really cool ones in there. But for this year, they have the 1701D, which they've done before. I think this is the second time they've done it. And this one has the TNG theme music, and they also have Captain Picard's narration.
Oh, nice. Oh, that'd be quite cool.
And this is done by Lynn Norton, one of the longtime artists for Hallmark doing the keepsakes. And it's going to be a 4.5-inch wide Enterprise D, and it's going to sell for $32.95.
That looks really cool. I mean, it's you always love the shape of the Enterprise D. It's one of those Enterprises that it doesn't look good from every angle, but there's a few angles where it's just astonishing to look at. So yeah, if you don't have a D on your tree to rhyme accidentally, this would definitely be the year to go ahead and get it. But there's a couple more that they're talking about releasing as well. The next one I see is the meeting between alternate Spock and Prime Spock from the 2009 film Space Adventure.
Yes. Now, you need to make sure, if you want this one, you need to get down to your Hallmark store quickly, because friend of the show, Lieutenant Commander Ben McCormick from Fort Trek, has told me that he is planning to buy all of these ornaments. He wants to buy the entire stock of the epic meeting between the two Spocks. He's actually planning this year to have a tree with nothing on it but this ornament. So
I keep waiting for you to say, and then burn them.
Yes, he's going to go out to the desert and he's going to bury them in the same hole with all of those Atari 2600 ET cartridges.
Exactly, that's exactly right.
But no, I'm looking forward to the photos of Ben's tree this year.
Yes.
Which is going to be devoted to Space Movie 2009.
Right.
Now, this one is going to measure 4.5 inches high, which means it's mini Spock meets mini Spock Prime.
Right. And of course, they're doing the Vulcan salute to each other and telling each other to LLAP, as you do. And I, a lot of people, this was one of their favorite scenes. It's kind of Leonard Nimoy saying goodbye to Star Trek. So to commemorate that is definitely something I'd be interested in doing on my tree this year.
Yeah, it's a great looking ornament. So the next one that we have up is Dr. Leonard Bones McCoy, of course.
Damn it, Jim, I'm not an ornament, I'm a doctor.
I really hope it says that. You know, I don't know how much sense of humor Hallmark has about these things, but if I were the artist creating this ornament, that's totally what would be on the little chip inside the ornament.
Yeah, definitely. And this one, I believe, is also 4.5 inches tall. So I'm sensing a trend, and it's going to cost $14.95. And of course, he's wearing, you know, that awesome blue. It's not teal. It's not fuchsia. It's a blue uniform, because that's what science officers wear. Damn it.
Well, they have to keep the 4.5 inch thing here so that during the summer you can actually play with the ornaments and you know, reenact your favorite scenes from Star Trek.
Of course.
You don't want, you know, McCoy to be 8 inches tall while Spock is 4.5 inches tall.
Well, the problem is when they release the Viridian 3 ornament and it's also 4.5 inches tall, and then you want to crash your 4.5 inch tall Enterprise D ornament into it, the scale is just not really gonna match up.
They should do a life-size Viridian 3.
I think they should.
Just see them backing that up to your house. So, all right. Well, this for I know we have a lot of listeners who will flock to get the McCoy ornament.
And also coming up next week, next year, from Hallmark, we've got the Scotty figure, who I believe is also 4.5 inches tall. So I don't know how many of the TOS cast they've done, but obviously they've done McCoy, and then Scotty's coming up next year, and he appears to be holding some sort of device. I'm not really sure what it's going to do.
You sure it's not some kind of space beer can from engineering?
That's possible.
From the JJ engineering.
Yeah. It's a vital component to the moonshine still they have running.
That's what was in all those tubes that you went into, right? It wasn't water. Right. It was moonshine. So then we know that alternate universe Argyle actually designed engineering.
Well, you know that Prime Argyle actually spends a lot of time in the holodeck watching, you know, how Scotty ran things back on the old Enterprise. And one of those things was the still that's in the back of engineering. So that's, you know, Argyle. You know, it's not that Argyle wanted to build a still, but because Scotty did it, he sort of felt it necessary to continue the tradition.
Well, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, the Scotty one is coming up in 2013, along with one from Arena with Captain Kirk fighting the Gorn.
Yeah, which is about 8 times more dynamic than the fight in the actual show.
That's right.
Even though it's completely still.
That's right. But, you know, you have a little bit of breeze in your living room, and that shuffles around just a little bit. And it actually moves more quickly than the Gorn did in Arena.
Yeah. And this is something good to keep around your house, just in case you have someone who is going to maybe make an episode of Star Trek Enterprise that features the Gorn. And you need to remind them what the Gorn look like, because maybe they forgot what the Gorn look like when they're about to make that episode of Enterprise. So you can just put this, you know, show them, look, it's very particular. This is what the Gorn look like. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I know. We'll talk about that a bit in the future about that Gorn.
But this is a very cool, I especially like the look on Kirk's face as he's about to kick the legs out from the Gorn.
Right. Now, the next one, I know a lot of fans won't really be into this, but they're doing one for the USS Kelvin from Space Movie 2009. And I have to say, this one actually looks really cool.
It really does. And, you know, I actually had breakfast this morning with one of our Twitter friends, Sci-Fi Commons, Dave. And this scene actually just came up as we were talking about emotional scenes in cinema. We weren't even talking about Star Trek. But the scene with the Kelvin, with George Kirk at the helm, where he, spoiler alert, he crashes it into the Narada and dies as James Kirk is being born. I mean, just looking at this ornament, I'm just about tearing up. And to have this ornament, I think I would actually get this ornament. I don't know why they're releasing it in 2013. And I don't know how big a seller it's going to be, but that was the scene from Space Movie 2009 that really affected me the most. And it's one of those things where, because they started it with such a good scene, I just sort of gave them a pass for the rest of the film. So, and the ship looks cool. I mean, It's an interesting looking design. It's got this sort of aged look to it as well. It's not pristine. It looks like a cool ornament.
Yeah, it really does look very nice. Now, I think they're releasing it in 2013 because it's going to be the Kelvin A. So it's a little spoiler there. If I'm not mistaken, I think Carl Urban spilled the beans on that in an interview the other day as well.
I see. But is that they come to their senses and they take the Enterprise away from Kirk and they give him the reborn Kelvin.
Right, the Kelvin A, that's right.
Yes.
All right, so head down to your Hallmark store. Again, I don't have access to a Hallmark store. Mm. I believe that the 2012 ornaments should be available by now. I think around July 14th, maybe the release date on those.
Okay.
I believe is correct. So they're probably there now. And I do remember back growing up when I lived in the States that these ornaments do often disappear off the shelves fairly quickly. So.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Make sure you, if you want them, head down and get your hands on them.
Dark John 99.
Say my name, no one is around you. Say, baby, I love you, you ain't running game. Say my name, you acting kind of shady. Ain't calling me baby, why the sudden change? Say my name, if no one is around you. Say, baby, I love you, if you ain't running game. Say my name, you acting kind of shady.
Well, okay, Greg, as we move into movie news and rumors, there's been a lot of talk this week about the name and what we're going to call the next Star Trek movie.
Right, yes. And I'm actually very much looking forward to seeing the new Star Trek movie, The Star Trek Rises.
Yes. No, you need to lose the word Star Trek from
it. Oh, that's
right. It's just going to be Rises.
It's just Rises. Not even right. Like Khan Rises. No, just Rises. But it'll be in the Star Trek font, so you'll understand that it's a Star Trek film.
Yeah. It's all you need. It's just as long as the typeface is correct. That's all you need.
I did see a fantastic shirt that was Star T-Rex, and it was three T-Rexes in the uniforms with phasers and tricorders. I thought that could make a good next film.
It could be, or it could be Star X-Rex from
yes,
our
exactly.
from our iTunes reviews. But so Damon Lindelof's talking about the title again and talking about how mm-hmm. hard it is to come up with a title, and that they have spent, he says, there's been more discussion about what to call the film than there was about actually shooting the film, which I hope he's exaggerating, because if this is true, I think it's pretty sad.
Right. I think they're going to call it Star Trek. It was all a dream and they all go to heaven. Because that's how Lindelof typically likes to go. That's the direction he typically goes with these sorts of things.
I guess. And then we'll be left wondering, okay, so why did we watch all of this, right?
Exactly. He did say a few things, that there's no word that comes after the colon that's any good. So he's sort of batting down the idea that it might be, you know, Star Trek anti-disestablishmentarianism or something like that.
Yeah, he said that the colon represents everything that the fans have been turned off about Star Trek, right?
Yeah, and I'm not really connecting with him on that. It's not really... Insurrection is a good or bad film based off the content of the film. I don't think anyone didn't see it because of the title, and they definitely... I don't think the colon had anything to do with whether or not anyone saw it. I don't know what you do with these things. Obviously, the trend nowadays is to not put a number on it, just to have the name of the franchise, name of the episode. And, I mean, that just works for me. It eliminates confusion. So, I don't like the... I guess what I don't like is the single word. I think single words, insurrection, nemesis. It's a little bare-boned, like the DS9 episode just called Cardassians. You should put a little bit more effort into it than just the first noun that popped into your head when writing the script.
No. Right. Let's see. Who's in this episode a lot? There are Cardassians in here. Okay, well, Cardassians, which was basically the way they operated every week on Voyager, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
So I don't know. I mean, you can't call it Star Trek 12. When numbers get that high,
right,
it just becomes like a sad commentary that a franchise, even if it's Star Trek, you feel like, eh. It's like I see, like I got an update on my computer, like, please install Firefox 14. I'm like, just quit putting numbers on it already at this point. And they can't call it Star Trek 2 because that's going to anger the fan base.
Well, of course, I've already said they should call it Star Trek 2 Boldly Go. So they sort of, I've sort of surreptitiously got the 2 in there, sort of like Xbox 360 was named the that to put the 3 in there to match up with the PlayStation 3. You got to sneak it in so people know, oh, this is the new one. No, 2 Boldly Go. I think it'd be awesome, though, if they spelled it with the number 2 and then the word Boldly Go. Maybe hashtag Boldly Go.
That could work. That could work. But I think what they really should do, if they really want to get people into the theater, is go ahead, drop the Star Trek name from it. Just don't have Star Trek in it. Just call it Barrel Roll. Right. Now, that would pull people in. People
definitely.
Be, what are you doing this weekend? Well, I'm going to Barrel Roll. I mean, everyone would be into it. It would make more money than Space Movie 2009 made.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I'm waiting game. I feel like we've talked about this so many times. We've talked it to death. The title will be something. It probably won't have a colon. It probably won't be a single boring word. But it probably will be something kind of boring and easily marketable. So... Too Bold to Go, 2013.
So, Greg, last week we talked about the comments that Carl Urban made about Mitchell Batch. And now Damon Lindelof has come out and said that Carl Urban went off the reservation with his recent comments.
Yeah, off the reservation. And I'm actually not even sure what that means. Does that mean he was speaking out of turn? Does that mean he was going crazy? This was not a confirmation nor denial. It was just somewhere in between. It was saying, yeah, Urban shouldn't have said anything. I still think we can be pretty sure that there's no Mitchell in the upcoming film. That would be, that'd be quite a twist, based on the comic, and based off of the look of Cumberbatch. He just, the leather suit just doesn't really scream Mitchell to me.
No, that doesn't scream Mitchell. Now, I will say that Benedict Cumberbatch does look a lot like Gary Mitchell, so it wouldn't surprise me. But yeah, it would be quite a twist, so I don't know about that one.
Yeah.
In an interview, Lindelof said, "I don't begrudge Carl or anything that he said because this is his story too, but I will not confirm or deny anything that he said. This is the thing about keeping secrets, which is sooner or later it's going to come out because somebody said something and hopefully that doesn't happen on camera or formally in an interview." So right. I guess you can spill all the secrets you want, but if a camera wasn't rolling, then it doesn't count, basically.
I guess.
Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, I don't know what to make of any of this. But yeah, I think they just need to announce it. I think they just need to say who Cumberbatch is playing and get that out there and let people start debating amongst themselves whether or not it's a good idea. It, of course, would be easier if he were just playing a brand new villain. But as when we played canon or not canon last week, we know that it is some canon character, whether it's one of the Mudd brothers or Khan, it's one of them. So we need to just know which one so we can start the speculation engines.
As Enterprise started to wind down in the fourth season, we finally did make it back to the original series universe, which was kind of the promise of the series from the beginning, and it just kind of took us until the end to get there. But not only did we get there and get to see the original series uniforms and a Constitution-class ship, we got to do it in the Mirror Universe in the two-part episode Inner Mirror Darkly. And today we're going to talk about that episode. And of course, Greg is here. And also we have back with us friend of the show, Brian Finifter from Down in Front. Hello, Brian.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
And we have Michael Fisher with us as well. Hello, Michael.
Hey, guys. Good to be back.
Welcome, both of you.
Glad to have you guys with us. And of course, Michael, you're a friend of the show as well. I mean, you were on here.
Thank you.
You're here like every third episode, right? Just like Brian. It's,
pretty much, yeah. I love that title, as I said on Twitter once. Thank you, friend of the show.
All right, guys. So let's talk about In a Mirror Darkly. And there's a lot to talk about in here, as we just talked about in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
But why don't we kick it off with the very beginning, with the opening sequence and the title sequence.
And of course, I was disappointed we didn't get like a heavy metal, like a death metal version of Faith of the Heart.
We should have just had the song that the guy from Star Trek 4 is playing on the bus.
Right. Oh yeah, I hate you, by Kirk Thatcher.
How many megatons and I hate you.
Be rage.
But I will take any. I will take absolutely anything. I will take. I will take the screams, the screeching of a child over, or the cackling of a hyena or Hitler orgasming. I will take anything over the actual Enterprise theme.
The music that Mike Sussman referred to as that tambourine slapping music that we got rid of for a couple episodes.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And God bless them for getting rid of it for even that few, even for those couple.
Yeah, it's amazing how polarizing Faith of the Heart is. You either hate it, which I think is a good 80%, or you really love it. I had breakfast this morning with Sci-Fi Commons.
Or you're mentally retarded in some way, shape, or form.
Well, you know, I and Sci-Fi Commons were discussing. We like the opening music. Like
I also like the opening music. So we're in that mentally retarded camp, according to Brian. So.
You know, I liked it back in its initial run. And when Enterprise opened up and everyone was immediately from the start hating on the theme music, I was like, you know, no, I'm going to give it a chance. And I was like, okay, I can see why this was chosen. But then as Enterprise kind of consistently went downhill for the first two seasons in quality, I could give it less and less flexibility. So I was like, you know, no. I've always hated the song, and I will say it honestly now.
But when you say it went downhill, you're implying that it at some point started at the top of a hill. And I think that conveys a false impression.
I think when a pilot episode involves a future shotgun blowing up a grain silo in a farm field, you've already won in my book.
Because the guy is chasing a Klingon to get off his lawn. Yeah.
Get off my space lawn.
Yeah, it's a pretty brilliant opening right there.
Well, you know, Michael has that recording that he did of the theme song that I know, Michael, when you watch from third season forward, right? When you watch Enterprise, you hit play on your tape deck. I've lost faith in this show.
Right. That's correct, yes.
I think my deal is I don't connect so much the theme song with the show itself. The song and the opening title sequence talks to me about space travel. It speaks to me about the future and how we're getting there. It shows the next generation space shuttle. It shows the new space station before it was even built. And it gets me excited.
It gets me excited about
the future.
No, it doesn't.
It does me. That's all I can speak to.
I don't know why. Other people's brains work differently, I guess, and I will try to understand, but I never will.
When it's juxtaposed with the opening sequence, I get that. I totally am with you, Greg. I'm like, I see that, and that's why I was able to give it a pass for so long. And it's like, okay, I can make it work. On a good Enterprise episode, I can make it work.
Well, let's bring it into this actual episode. Let's talk about the title sequence that was done for this two-parter, which actually is, I think as Sussman said, this is what Star Trek would be in the Mirror universe. So if Mirror, Chris, Greg, Michael, and Brian were sitting here talking mm-hmm. about Star Trek in that universe, this would be the show we would be watching every week for 45 years.
Wow. If this were the Mirror universe, then Mike and I would have already plotted to assassinate the two of you and taken over your podcast.
That's
very true.
Into the first twist already. Yeah.
So Michael, you're in the agony booth right there, as you always are when we record. So that's just kind of a trick. Yeah, you're trying to get us to come in there. That's and then correct. You're going to slam the door on us, right?
This is why I keep inviting you guys to come see me in Boston. Yes.
Well, of course, this is the Mirror universe. We'd all have podcast girls behind us. That
you
are
guys don't.
Also plotting to kill us, but at least they keep us company.
At least
yeah, making us drinks.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right.
I like the doing a fun thing with the title sequence, and it's especially nice because you can that's the kind of thing that a production team will only do because they really really want to.
Yeah.
There's never any abundance of time in any film production or especially TV production. It's always go go go, and you always have 12 fewer hours than you need. So to actually like have taken the time to do that shows it was, you know, like, yeah, we just kind of want to have fun with this.
Yeah.
And this is a chance for us to do something just cool and fun and kind of kooky and sideways. So let's kind of go balls to the wall and really do it. So I like that. And I think it works. Like you say, it's very much like if this were the Mirror universe and we were watching, you know, Mirror Trek week in and week out, it's the show that would be the title sequence of that show. And that's cool. It helps fill in the universe a little more. And it does a nice job filling that in because, I don't know, we were talking about before the show started, this is the only Mirror Universe episode out of any time we visited the Mirror Universe that takes place entirely within that and has no connection to the continuity that we know, the universe that we follow. So we're just watching this Mirror Universe story. We're not watching our characters go through the Mirror Universe. We're just watching this Mirror Universe story. And so, yeah, it helps kind of provide just a nice little sense of context to, the rest of this world, the peripheral of this world.
Yeah, it's kind of like these are the only two episodes of the sixth Star Trek series. And that helps really sell it by having this opening sequence. And it's cool. I mean, sure, most of it's like stock footage from like World War II, but they've put in a couple shots.
And other Paramount films. And
Hunt for Red October.
Yeah. Hunt for October shows up. And then there's a shot from Voyager, which is really out of place, especially when you go back and watch Voyager and you're like, wait, that's what?
Well,
but nothing quite so out of place as that moon landing one.
It's not out of place as the Dyson spheres for space dock from
that's true.
Last week.
Yes.
Dyson sphere space dock. But no, it's really cool to see.
After watching In a Mirror Darkly, I went back and watched some other episodes from this season too, and including the season openers. And there's the big climactic scene of at the end of the season opener, the space Nazi storyline thing.
Oh god!
And so it's the meeting between Daniels and Archer, and they've got the history tapestry going, circling around them. And it's like that's. If you actually really watch it, that's really like obvious like Paramount stock footage. Just every like, there's Ben-Hur and there's Mutiny on the HMS Bounty and there's their World War II film and there's that. It's like, there's their Civil War film. And then it actually gets to like Star Trek and like, it's what you have to do.
Yeah, it's always one of those cost cutting measures. I mean, I just watched The Dark Knight Rises and I must say the Paramount New York backlot set has never looked better.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, because one of the professional hazards of living in Los Angeles and working in the film industry is you get very good at spotting locations and going, this hospital in this episode of The Office, I worked on a movie that shot out of that office, or there's something like LA Center Studios, which just pops up all over the place. Instantly you recognize it.
Yeah.
So it's like, watching The Dark Knight Rises, like, that shot's LA. Oh, that shot's New York. Oh, that shot's Pittsburgh. And it's like, they just continually hop from LA to Pittsburgh to Chicago to New York to over and over and over again. But watching something like Star Trek or many other things that are clearly shot in the back lot, you can go, oh, that's the Universal New York Street. Yeah. Oh, that's the Warner Brothers, whatever.
It's almost as recognizable a physical location as it as like some place you go get coffee. You're like, oh, there's the Wild West back lot. It's just very recognizable. But I think
that's the way it goes.
I think we were talking about the opening title sequence. And I don't know how we got into that, but
well, what's interesting about the title sequence is that it was contemplated on other shows like DS9. I was reading, you know, the commentary calls out that it was discussed on DS9, where it's like, you want to change the titles for this special Trials and Tribulations, and one of the reasons they didn't was that there was not much enthusiasm among the other staffers for it, which I get. Because I think kind of everyone was focused on doing a really good episode of TV with Trials and Tribulations. And
thankfully, they never had that concern while they were doing Enterprise, so it's good.
I think that's just it. And, you know, I think a lot of hard work went into this episode, particularly on the design side. But certainly Mike Sussman seems to be really excited when he talks about the script. But, you know, I think the intro was one of the best parts of the episode. That's what I have to say about the intro. I think probably one of the more interesting things too is that they reused the score for a bunch of Enterprise promos for the remainder of that season.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So,
but and the other thing is they used this big militaristic thing for the end credits, which I love way more. The Archer's theme that they use for the end credits is horrible. That it sounds like graduation or something.
Greg, I want to confirm something here. You really like Faith of the Heart, and you do not like Archer's theme for the end.
Yes,
is that right?
Exactly.
Okay, for the record, I want to make sure I'm getting.
I am
your
on the record.
Quote.
I am stating this. Yes,
I am. I am. I'm okay. All right. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye now.
Well, like I said, a certain portion of the population, simply their brain does not work correctly.
It's boring. you people.
Anyway.
Yes, anyway.
All right, well, let's talk about the fact that this is completely contained in the Mirror Universe and what that allowed them to do that they otherwise would not have been able to do with the prequel series, where they have all this canon ahead of them that they can't violate. And just what it meant to the story itself, too.
Apparently, they had talked about trying to get Shatner onto the show via a Mirror Universe episode way back in, what was it, season 2? Yeah. And I really have no idea how that would have worked. Would it have been Mirror Kirk doing an incursion for some reason? I really don't know how that would have worked. That would have been very bizarre.
Emperor Tiberius, because isn't that part of the, at least the non-canon storyline that
I think so. Yeah.
Kirk went on to be emperor. Yeah. But,
did he? And before he was overthrown by the peaceniks or whatever.
By the whatever. So, I don't know.
I think DS9 overwrote some of that canon, but yeah.
Did they?
I like I said before, it's a fun idea that we're just going to do a story completely contained within the universe. It's a fun throwaway kind of a thing. I mean, it's necessarily not connected. It necessarily by its nature doesn't connect into the story that we're following on a week to week basis. So it's kind of like, okay, it goes back to this quote. I probably used it on the show before. I know I used it on Down in Front, but it's a Nicholas Meyer quote that he's talked about in an interview, and I just read his book, which he also includes. But he has this quote of, when I tell you a story, I want you to know the reason I tell you a story is by the end of it, I want you to know why I told you that story in the first place. And that's kind of his way of saying, you know, make sure your story has a point that you're actually trying to communicate, that you're actually doing this for a reason, not just to kill time or whatever. And so it's like, but when you're doing a TV show, you have a lot more latitude. You have a lot more time and more corners to explore, and you can do sort of these fun things. X-Files was great. It's just kind of every now and then doing a weird kind of random off the wall episode that didn't necessarily tie into the overall mythos, but you had fun. And I think that was kind of the idea behind this. And I'm okay with that on the theory level. The problem with that, though, is that Enterprise didn't have a point to it normally. It's not like, okay, we're actually taking a break from anything, really. We're just going off and doing this fun thing. And it's cool, it's fun, but I don't know what we're doing the rest of the time either. So I don't know exactly what we're taking a vacation from,
so to speak. And I feel like when you do that, when you take the break, regardless of what kind of show you're coming from, you have to make sure that it's worth leaving the continuity, like departing from the continuity for a second to go have this fun thing.
Right.
And yeah. I feel like Lost was a good example of a show that did that well. Of course, that's debatable, but you know, there was large chunks of seasons where it was like, hey, we're following these alternate people who aren't really the people we're used to. And I think that was done well. I think in this episode of Enterprise, for all the complaints I had about the early part of the series, I think at this point the show had sort of found its feet, and we had had some really nice episodes at points in the third and fourth season.
It had found Manicoto's feet, and those those helped out quite a bit.
They did, yeah. So as a result, this episode was kind of even more disappointing to me because Enterprise had just sort of gotten to a point where it was like, wow, on a week-to-week basis, this is kind of respectable. And I'm like, I it's kind of left its cheesy baggage behind for the most part. And then this just explosion of hamminess happened for no discernible reason. So,
well, yeah, I mentioned this feels like it's like two parts to nowhere for me because from the very first time I saw this, I thought, well, it's cool to see the TOS uniforms. It's cool to see the sets. It's cool to see the Tholians and the Tholian web and everything. But when I got to the end of the second part of this, my reaction was like, why did I just watch these two episodes? Like, I have no idea where I started, why the characters went on this journey, or why it ended, and what's happening next.
Right.
And I remember
idea why they bothered to sit down and tell you the story in the first place.
Exactly. Yes. I remember when it first came on, and a lot of people I knew were like, oh man, did you see the episodes? That was so awesome. And they had the TOS uniforms on, and it was just, these were like brilliant episodes. And I was like, it had some cool moments, but I don't think they were really very good episodes. I was very disappointed in them.
And what it really boils down to is the fact that it's exceptionally guilty of what Enterprise had always been guilty of, which is, hey, remember the cool thing from Star Trek before? We're just going to trot that out for you.
Yeah.
And it's like, In a Mirror Darkly did it well, or at least it did it as well as Enterprise ever did it. So it certainly did it better than trotting out the Ferengi or the Borg or whatever else. And so it's like,
they trotted out pretty well. But yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Definitely better than the Ferengi. That's for sure. I'll give you that. But so they trotted out the original series uniforms and the original series sets, and they trotted out all this stuff and the Gorn and the Tholians and they did it better here than they did it anywhere else, but they're still falling back on that old pattern of, remember all the crap from before that other people thought up? We're just going to kind of try and wave that in front of you for a little while and hope you like it. It's like,
I enjoy being
on the original Enterprise again, but stop, please.
And I think that's what my memories of this episode are. Oh, we went back to the original series sets. We had Archer in the, the Enemy Within uniform and all these fun things. But then when I'm watching it, okay, they've got the original series sets, but they're shooting them on HD cameras from the early 2000s. And it looks grainy and kind of ugly. And the acting, Archer's, he's got like this weird like half buzz cut. It's not really a buzz cut, but it's weird, like spiky. It's actually kind of like Michael's hair there. Now that I'm
looking at like my hair right now, yeah.
But it's not Archer. I don't know what that hair is. And he's in the second part, he's got like a weird alter ego that's talking to him and telling him to do weird things.
Yeah, he has his vision of the regular universe Archer taunting him from his shoulder,
right. Something like that.
A massive inferiority complex as a result of his double.
Is that like
I was waiting for like
his angel or his devil?
Right.
I mean, is the mirror universe version of the devil on your shoulder an angel? Is that how that works? Because it's a flip thing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
So when I actually, it's especially part two that gets to me. I actually really like part one because it's just setting up. Oh, this universe is kind of cool. It's a lot like, I believe the first DS9 mirror universe episode was Crossover. And it's just an intro to the universe. It's we meet a couple characters, we have a little bit of fun, and it's done. And if that had been all that this was, I think I would have been fine with it. It's when they go to part two and we start having all of these fights of who's in power. They start going on the original series sets and it doesn't really go anywhere. We'll talk about the Gorn in a second. And then it's like how many different people can be in command of the ship until we get to the end of the show. And I, at that point, I'm like, I don't know why we did this entire thing. If it had been one episode and it had been fun, that would have been fine. But when you're going to make it two episodes that don't tie into continuity, you've got to make it something like Year of Hell that's just balls to the wall. This is what Voyager should have been. Yeah, amazingness. Well done. But yes. no one wanted Inamir Darkly to be what Enterprise was. This wasn't their chance to really do the sort of show they want to do the whole time. This was just a lark. And two episodes of larking is not very much fun.
I think my take on it is, yeah, I agree, Greg, that the first part of this story is not too bad because it is leading you, something is going on, and then they get to the point where they discover the Constitution-class Defiant, which, of course, went missing. And we know where it came, where it ended up now. But this, the second, you know, this was going to be a one-parter originally, and then it ended up being a two-parter, and they could spend more money building the sets and so forth. And Sussman wrote the first part and then wasn't planning to write the second part. Didn't know who was going to write it. He did end up writing the second part in the end, but it felt like the typical case where someone writes a first part and they don't know where it's going. And then they're just gonna, it's not my problem anymore. Kind of. And so then he figured out where to go. But the second part just feels like a bunch of fanboys who love the original series, who love that universe, and they're just having fun recreating everything and recreating the visuals and the atmosphere of TOS. And that's great. I mean, and it looks great. I think that you can tell, Brian, as you said, that a lot of, or I don't remember Michael or Brian or both of you said, a lot of effort, a lot of energy went into creating this. I mean, you can tell they really wanted to make this episode. And they did a fantastic job from that standpoint of putting their heart into it and recreating everything. But the second part just feels like you said, Greg, it's just like, we're on the ship. Let's do everything that we can think of from the original series, throw it all in here, but it doesn't go anywhere. And
yeah, it's like they got a Tholian and they showed us what the Tholians look like and they didn't do anything
with
it.
They shattered him with temperatures.
The other thing that they say that the reason that they're wearing environmental suits when they beam over to the Defiant is so that they will be forced to wear the original series uniforms. Now, this makes no sense to me. Does that mean that when Starfleet officers go out in their EV suits, that they're just wearing like those Starfleet blues, the underwear underneath? Wouldn't you be wearing something underneath your EV suit?
That is
would
true.
You, yeah. the EV would you be suit, forced
yeah, you
to...
You have some kind of underwear garments. Yeah. Are they body suits. Yeah.
They naked under the suits? Why would they be forced to wear the uniforms that they find in the Defiant?
I would even, like, in a situation like that, I would be perfectly fine just hanging a really lazy lantern on it and going, okay, yeah, we beamed over. You know what? I looked in the captain's closet and this was what was in there. Yeah. And I thought,
sure,
why the hell not?
I guess. I don't know, Brian.
One of the girls. Especially if you're like Hoshi and you're wearing the regular uniform with scissors taken to it. If you can find any other uniform sitting around, you're definitely going to put that on instead.
Yeah. I just know that Brian just said that he's going to hang a lantern on it when he gets over there because he beamed over in his EV suit and he had to find something to wear. I don't know where you're going with that, but that's what I heard.
Hanging a lantern is, just to explain quickly, hanging a lantern is a writing term that basically means when you have something in a script or a story that is a massive convenience or contrivance or coincidence or whatever, and it's something that the audience member go, oh, that was really convenient. The way you disarm an audience member from doing that is by quote-unquote hanging a lantern, which is you have a character go, man, what how lucky that was. Yeah. And so by acknowledging it within the work, then you disarm the audience. Anyway, yes.
Is that the same technically as hanging a lampshade on it that is often referenced on the TV Tropes website?
Yeah, it's the same same concept.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have I mentioned there's the Jack the Giant Killer trailer in which there are both magic beans and the guy hangs a lantern in the trailer? It made me very happy.
Really?
I didn't see that.
But like ultimately, yeah, all this stuff is just a giant fan service. Like the second part of this episode could just be called, you know, In a Mirror Darkly Fan Service Edition, because I mean, and there's a lot of it. And that's why for me, Greg, and it's interesting because I like having sort of this diametrically opposed viewpoint from yours, which is good, because the second episode, because I had no investment in the universe going into the second episode. Because the second episode had so much more visual candy for me and so much more like TOS stuff, I liked the second episode better because the first episode had already convinced me. I was like, okay, oh, you have nothing to offer me with this? Oh, okay. Well, then I would rather be on this beautifully constructed retro set with these cool props and old uniforms than be on the drab Enterprise sets for this, you know, where everybody, you know, where it's 2004 and on
that does make sense. Sets.
Yeah. At least, like, I get to hang out in this cool, you know, at least I get to hang out in the old bar that I used to hang out when I lived in my college town. It's like all the people there, like the people there are no longer my friends. Like my friends have moved on, but I can still like come back and enjoy the bar. It's like, and it's all new people that I don't really care for, but at least I can hang out at the bar.
Scenery is the same and I can.
Right.
Yeah.
I think my issue is kind of that they didn't have limits. At this point, I think they had a little bit too much money. They had a little bit too much freedom when they told themselves, we're not going to have any connection whatsoever to our universe. Mm-hmm. You know, they say that art needs limitations. And look, something like Trials and Tribulations from DS9, where they literally had to match shots from the original series and cut into scenes from the original series. And it turned out so good. They had to put so much care into it. Whereas this, they could do literally anything they wanted. And I think that really screwed him over. Because it's like, well, we don't really know what we're going to do. How about we bring a Gorn in? How about we chase a computer-generated Gorn around reconstructed TOS sets for 20 minutes?
Right. And the Gorn. Why is the Gorn in here in the first place?
Yeah, right.
There's nothing that sets up why they would encounter a Gorn. It's just like, you know, we really like the Gorn, and he was only in one episode of the original series. Let's bring him back.
Didn't you listen to the hilarious actor behind the blue mask? His name is Slar. Yeah, our slave master.
Our slave master.
I forget that scene every time I watch this episode. I'm like, there's this interrogation scene with this blue actor that I think I tried to forget from last time, but apparently I'm watching it again.
I mean, it wouldn't have surprised me.
In the conference room set, which, if I'm not mistaken, that's like the only scene that happens in this in the conference room, in the original series conference room.
They built it so they could talk to some random extra.
So they could put, and they put that up, that guy, whoever he is, in 12 hours worth of makeup to do that, and built that set to. And I mean, yeah, I was going to disagree with you, Chris, when you say, or Greg, I think, when you say it just felt like they had too much money and they could do too much, because that's never the case.
Right. It never is.
Very rarely the case, especially in television. But, you know, thinking of that scene, you might be right, because there's no point.
Yeah.
I was expecting it was all, it's just to the
a mess.
Point.
It's messy.
It would not have surprised me if Archer, the Gorn is there, and he runs down the corridor to get away from the Gorn, and he turns the corner, and there's a Horda in the corridor. And he's like, oh my God, there's a Horda, and he turns around, he climbs up, you know, climbs up the ladder to the next deck, and then there's a Mugato in the hallway. It's like let's just throw in everything
that we like.
Yes, exactly.
And he's teamed up with the Talosians.
And then there's Lincoln.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. There's Link in there.
And Apollo is here as well.
Yeah. And
Trelane is caught in there's a giant space hand holding the ship. Yeah.
And then he runs into, he opens the doors to a cargo bay, and like every extra from the original series, they're all in that cargo bay.
It's like this, it's like the end scene in Titanic, and then like, you know, Hoshi and Archer kiss and everyone claps, and then the episode ends. Guys, I think we've written what this episode could have been. This could have been magical.
Yeah, could have been.
And then the fact that the Gorn has nothing in common with the Gorn from the original series. You know, at least with the Tholians, the Tholian from the neck, if you want to call it a neck up, it looks a lot like the Tholian that we saw in the Tholian web. But then we get to see going down, like, what does a Tholian look like? But it makes sense.
Pretty cool.
It makes sense that this kind of crystalline spider creature, it kind of makes sense. You can see where they went from TOS to this point. The Gorn, as I've said to Greg before, I don't know if it was on the show or not, but the Gorn in here, it's like the 1998, was it, Godzilla movie?
Yeah, exactly. He's got this weird elongated neck on
him.
It's
just like complete, let's just forget what Godzilla looks like and let's make this new creature. And it's like that with the Gorn here.
It's not great CGI in the first place, but you know, that's also, you know, several years ago, so we're looking at it, you know, on the side of several years of progress on that.
And it's not that bad. I mean, the scene where he's like hitting him with the phaser butt and where the Gorn like lifts the crewman and it's like running around. Yeah. It's not horrible. Like it could have gone a lot worse. It's but my problem is with the look of the Gorn. It's just that it's so disconnected from that dude that Kirk fought on Cestus 3.
Yeah. And it's so, like, and I get it. The what Kirk fought is bad too. On the other side of the spectrum, you can see the zipper going up the back.
Oh, they didn't want to do the monster suit again.
And I get that. You don't want the Godzilla suit with the zipper up the back. That's fine. But you can find a middle ground. You can put the guy in the suits there, and then do certain things to add to it. So it's okay. Like, There's a guy called his screen name or whatever is Adiwan, who basically has gone back and done his own version of the Star Wars special editions, and he's done fixes, you know, to them that actually make sense. And one of the things that he has gone back and done in a lot of cases is give eye blinks to various aliens who didn't have that capability in the makeup on the day. So for example, Greedo blinks his eyes when he's talking to Han. It's like that's a good application of, okay, we can take CGI and we can take it a step further and just kind of layer it over the physical that already exists. You could have done something similar in this case and go, okay, you take the rubber suit with the zipper up the back and add something to it that's still uses what we've already seen as the base, and then take it a step further that we couldn't take.
And they've already been doing that with Phlox. I mean, there's that scene where Phlox like blows his face up.
Does the pufferfish thing.
But Phlox did it in the TOS remastered's. Like they did the same thing with the Gorn. They did the eye blink.
They made the Gorn blink in the remastered.
You're right.
They know how to do it. They just didn't bother with it this time.
You know, and Enterprise has actually done it well. You look at what they've done with the Andorians, what they've done with the Tellarites. They took two alien races from TOS that looked cheesy in the original series, and they made them look believable in Enterprise in a way that didn't make you think like, oh, wow, I can't believe what they did to the Tellarites. You know,
it looks more realistic. The new look of the Andorians has taken over for me. That's what canon Andorians look like. But there's no way that this monstrosity is canon Gorn to me.
I agree.
I feel like these are mutations that can only be explained by the Gorn's time spent on deck 22 of the Defiant, which is where the blue man told us he was hanging out. And I'm glad Star Trek is not on the air for only one reason, and that is so that I don't constantly have to slap my forehead about how many decks are on various starships versus what we are told by characters.
Well,
my favorite is still in, there's a line in First Contact. Where I guess Lily is like, you know, how big is this damn thing anyway? And Picard's like, oh, well, it's this, you know, has
24 decks.
I'm going to pull the numbers out of my ass here, but it's like, 24. He says, 24 decks. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's establishing that's how many decks the Enterprise E has in First Contact. And then in Star Trek Nemesis, they have an intruder alert on deck 26. Or if it's if there are 24 decks in first contact, they have an intruder alert on deck 26.
Well, there was a reason.
And Riker goes down and to deal with it. And on deck 26, at the bottom of deck 26 is a bottomless shaft. Two decks below the bottom of a ship is a bottomless shaft.
Actually,
that is my favorite.
No, that's my favorite. That is my favorite too. The only runner up is I'll do you one better. They don't even wait until they get to Nemesis to have 26 decks. They have scene in First Contact where 24 decks are established, and then Security Officer Daniels shows up like 15 minutes later when the Borg are overrunning everything. It's like, they've come from deck 26 all the way up to 15 or something like that. It's like, Picard's been misinformed, apparently, okay. I guess is the point.
And no one told him about the bottomless shaft either. So.
So Picard just doesn't know. Is that where like people go to like smoke and like like the boss doesn't know that
that's right.
Those decks are there. So hey, you wanna run down for a quick beer on 25? The old man doesn't even fucking know it's there.
Know it's so. Down there.
Jerry's down there. He's been taking a nap all morning.
On the Enterprise E, deck 26, that's where Argyle, makes all of his gin.
That's where he's been this whole time.
Yeah, they kick, there you go.
You know, he makes his hooch.
They rescued him from the Jefferies tubes on Viridian 3 after Troy crashed the D. He managed to sneak back onto the E, and he has his own deck. So Picard, I just see the scene where like Riker takes Picard down to deck 26 one day, and Picard's like, I never even knew this stuff was down here. They told me there were only 24 decks on this ship.
I look like a fucking asshole.
poor dumb Picard.
Oh, man. All right. Well, let's talk about some more of this story. Now, of course, Greg and I, we talk about Empress Hoshi on every episode of The Ready Room. But finally, we can actually talk about Empress Hoshi within the context of a story.
Yeah.
So,
and I've been excited. This is probably the main reason I asked if we could do In a Mirror Darkly.
Yes, and I must point out, since our listeners cannot see the video here, that, as you know, Greg chooses a nickname for every Ready Room. Today, Greg is Greg Empress Hoshi's personal bodyguard, Harbin.
Indeed. Well, I really like the concept of the personal bodyguard. I like that they gave Travis something to do finally by making him Archer's personal bodyguard. So, and it looks like that's what Travis ended up going on to be Hoshi's. So I actually have to kill Travis in an intense hand-to-hand combat. This is in season 5, but I take him on and yeah. Anyway, Empress Hoshi.
I know. Well, you're about to jump into the Hoshi thing. I do want to mention about Travis. Okay. I really like when they don't give him a lot to do because I never, ever believe him. I mean, from the pilot to the finale, I never believe that actor, ever.
Yeah.
However, I did love hearing from, I think it was Connor Trenier or one of those guys at a convention I was at last year, that whenever the camera wasn't rolling, what's the actor's name who plays Travis?
Anthony Montgomery
mm-hmm. Would not shut up. Like, he was the most talkative and, really? And funny guy. Like, honestly,
he's very
talked all day long.
He does.
I never knew that.
Yeah, he's a very, very outgoing, very fun guy to listen to. It's just on Enterprise, they gave him nothing to do.
Sure. Yeah. I think it was probably miscast, like most of the cast, in my opinion. But you guys want to talk about Hoshi, who I also wish was not on the show, but I'm going to shut up because, Greg, I know you love this woman. So please.
What I love, if I can rant real quick, what I love about Hoshi is that there's this through line where you can follow her from the very beginning when she's sleeping with, is it Forrest? Admiral Forrest?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or Captain Forrest?
Captain Forrest in this case, yeah.
She's even then plotting how she's going to get to the very end. So the whole thing may be a mess, but you can follow Hoshi from the very beginning as she's conniving and she's nudging people one way or the other. I mean, really, Archer didn't need like weird extra version, you know, devil Archer telling him things. He already had Hoshi telling him stuff and trying to encourage him towards self-destruction. And I do think that's really cool. The whole idea of the, you know, was it Hamlet's wife?
Lady Macbeth.
Lady Macbeth. I'm sorry. My Shakespeare, I've not read it in either this universe or the Mirror Universe.
Or the original Klingon.
or the original Klingon. So I'm, yes, but no, that Lady Macbeth, so that really fascinates me. And I love how she ends up being Empress Hoshi Sato at the end, at the command of the Defiant. I did want to see where the story goes just from there. Although everything else about this episode just completely falls apart for me.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's, I do agree that, you know, you can see that, that through line sort of there. I mean, even no, even having already watched the episode when it first came out and then rewatching it for the first time the other day, it's like, it doesn't super jump out that she's doing anything specific. She's just being, you know, a weird, manipulative concubine, you know, person. That's, you know, oh, you're in power? Okay, then I'm gonna, you know, nuzzle up to you and bouncing from whoever who do ever. I think the real problem behind this episode of this two-parter is the fact that it's all like palace intrigue style plotting, and these writers cannot do palace intrigue to save their lives. It's a very difficult thing to write of have all of these characters and motivations and, you know, schemes, you know, going back to the TV tropes thing, having various Xanatos gambits all going on at the same time. It's a very tough thing to write and to keep straight and to make compelling and interesting. And I just don't think these writers were ever up to it.
I would agree.
In any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, that's true. So I mean, Hoshi is no Lady Lannister. She's just not at that level in any way.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see George R. R. Martin and the producers of Game of Thrones do Game of Thrones in space. I can't wait for that day to happen. But,
Game of Captain's Chairs.
Yeah, there you go. But but this is not that, and it's not good.
I wonder if, you know, if this episode had had more time to you know, to be prepared. I mean, if it hadn't been this kind of last minute, you know, second part edition. I wonder if it would have been helped by the beefing up of that Hoshi kind of storyline, because I wasn't really aware that we were watching Hoshi's story until those last 5 seconds when she said, tell him it's Empress Hoshi. And it's like, okay, but wait, really? Like, I have a note here from before that says, so only the conflict over policy between Archer and Forrest is giving us reason to watch. Because I was kind of speculating in my notes about why I was watching this. Mm. And then like when the episode ends, I have, you're speaking with Empress Sato. For real? That's where you're leaving this. Like, that's my note. Like, I feel like if I had been advised that I was watching Hoshi's story earlier, maybe I would have paid more attention, and I probably still would have hated it, but at least I would have known what was going on. But when executive producers pops up on the black card and you're like, wait, for real? Like that? No, don't leave me like that after forcing me to invest that kind of time in it. So then it's only when you can go back and rewatch it for the production values that you're like, well, let me see if I can squeeze something interesting out of this.
That leads to another point I want to talk about, which is that if Enterprise had continued for 7 seasons, now Sussman does say that they were talking about, and Manny Coto said they're talking about revisiting the Mirror Universe in the 5th season. If it had continued on and this was merely the setup for the Mirror Universe, and they had done, say, 4 or 5 or 6 more episodes in the Mirror Universe over the next 3 seasons, do you think we would receive this episode differently than we do now?
Yeah, I mean, if the Hoshi thing had been a through line that they had played slowly, it could have possibly been interesting. Because we do see that in DS9, how there are some lines that go through. And then if you watch all of those Mirror Universe episodes in a row, you realize that they actually weave this pretty interesting tapestry. I think there's a way they could have done it. And I think part of what happened here was it was a little half-baked. They spent too much money. They jumped in too far. They overcooked it. But the actual ideas and concepts that went into it, they didn't. It was half-baked. They just didn't quite make it all happen before they went into production.
Let's be honest, though. Deep Space Nine went to the Mirror Universe well a little too often. And I think by the end there, when they're going back and they're like, and because they're killing off half, you know, that's half true. The characters that we know every episode, and by the end they're like, Vic Fontaine. Okay, Vic Fontaine is the Mirror Universe guy this time. It's like, okay. And you know, Deep Space Nine is a better written show than Enterprise was. So I can only imagine had Enterprise, you know, given its level of standard level of quality compared to DS9's standard level of quality, had they ended up going to that well 3, 4, or 5 times, and presumably have had a similar body count each time, just what kind of absolute dreck we would have had to sit through by the end. I'm glad that we don't have it, since we'll never know.
I do like the Mirror Universe episodes and how the body count does just rise up. I love Odo's like watery explosion in Crossover.
Oh yeah,
when Archer vaporizes Admiral Gregory Itzen, it's like, yes, that's pretty awesome. Like, we never get to see that.
No. I was wondering, I actually had a note on that where it's like, I really wanted to see the disintegration freeze frame effect from TOS. But, yeah, you know, we get more of like the TNG style, whatever. But that was really, like, I rewound for a second to watch that and see. Like, because when Star Trek has this little thing where it's this kid that's usually really very nice and sweet, but like maybe like one day a year, like for like a minute, you just see a flash in the kid's eyes of like, you're capable of some pretty creepy stuff, right?
Yeah.
Because Star Trek, like, and Star Trek will poke at that from time to time. I feel like the Odo explosion is one of them. Mm-hmm. I feel like the Next Generation blowing up of Remick is one that we always talk about.
But
Star Trek is capable of these weird kind of excursions into gore.
Occasional moments of horror, very creepiness. Yeah.
And I think it keeps you on your toes because you know they can always go there. It's not a show that's afraid to occasionally go there. So so when we see that vaporization maybe once every 5 years, you know that when someone's holding a gun, someone might be vaporized.
That could happen. Yeah. Just a side note, I love that they went the cheap props route on this, because that pistol, the Type 2 phaser that Archer picked up was an Art Asylum, like Diamond Select.
Oh, really?
$29.95
phaser. Yeah.
At least it wasn't like a Hallmark.
Nice.
Oh, you had the actual one? Wow.
Yeah. I don't think it was an Art Asylum, but yeah, I mean, I was watching the episode and he picked it up and went, that looks pretty much exactly like the one I have. It doesn't look really any... Like, the one I have is good-looking. It's a good-looking prop, but it's not screen-quality hero prop level.
Right.
So, like...
What made me curious is when I could see the
scene. I guess you guys just ran out of money by building the entire, Constitution class all over again.
And the full three-quarter bridge set, yeah.
Yeah. In which case, I guess I'll give it to you, because I would rather see the bridge and a regular, phaser prop than the other way around.
I really can't believe they built all of that. I mean, can you guys seriously? I'm starting to get back into video production, and just going to any location and shooting is like a hassle. Building a set is a huge hassle. I can't imagine building it for one episode. And everything they built the bridge, the conference room, like Jeffrey's tubes, bunch of corridors. Like-
They built sections of the Constitution class that we had never seen before.
We never
before.
Even
seen,
yeah. Which more of
the, not Jeffrey's tubes, but, like service corridors and the whatever and what, glowy matrix thing that he had to deal with. Yeah.
And where the Jeffrey's tube terminates, like the top of that ladder that, that we always see the angled tube. It's like, oh, we get to see what the top of that looks like. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah.
Which is great. I mean, the fanboy in me, especially the Starship geek fanboy, I mean, it's like, okay, the actual story is crap, but I'm just geeking out over being able to see the corners of this ship that I've grown up with, and in a certain sense, grown up on, and I get to see corners that I never got to see before. Sold. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, definitely.
That's the thing. I mean, with the new Star Trek, with the JJ stuff, a lot of fans talk about how they think that JJ or Orci or Kurtzman or Lindelof, don't love Star Trek or don't care about Star Trek itself, which I don't agree with myself, but that's what a lot of people think. But in the case of this one, regardless of whether you think Enterprise was a good prequel series or not, you can see in this particular episode that they all love the original series, and that's why they would go through all this effort to rebuild that whole bridge set just for what was going to be one, but turned out to be two episodes, largely to justify the cost and the corridors and the top of the ladder and all. But again, and they paid attention to so many details, like the grilling on the corridor of the hallway of a Constitution class ship and everything.
Yeah.
So they were like totally lost in it themselves as fanboys and forgot about the story element.
Yeah.
And I feel like the not the disconnect, but the separation between the very important separation between the writing staff and the design, you know, teams.
Yeah.
Is very evident in this and in a lot of particularly Enterprise, but I feel like to me in a general sense Star Trek's visual elements, its design is really, really so good. Regardless of how weak a particular story is, mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, particularly in set design and props and all that kind of stuff that I don't know the terms for. I mean, I feel like so often these guys all get short shrift because they've built this beautiful stuff for an episode that nobody wants to sit through long enough to see, you know, because the story is weak, and that, you know, that's frustrating. But thankfully, it doesn't happen all that often. I'm glad that not all episodes are like this one in that regard.
I mean, you look back to like the Ferengi, like the Last Outpost. Mm. There's nothing wrong with the Ferengi makeup. It's perfect. It's exactly what the Ferengi look like for the rest of, you know, until, you know. The only problem is the way that the director told them to play it, and so now it's ridiculous. But the guys who were sitting there trying to figure out what the Ferengi looked like, they were spot on. They made it absolutely happen. And I think that's true of everything. And, you know, we complain about what the Enterprise sets look like, but that's what they were told to make it look like. And I think it definitely feels at least like a real spaceship.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't feel slapped.
I don't like the Enterprise sets. It's just that I prefer to be on the Defiant in an episode like this. I like the Enterprise sets too.
Yeah.
So we also wanted to talk about Archer's part in the story a little bit. I mean, we touched on Archer just a little bit, but you feel like Archer also has a through line here. We talked about Hoshi having a through line, even though it maybe isn't evident until you get to the end. And then you look back and you're like, oh, okay. But
Archer has like a weird, jagged, broken through line in this. It's like he's like a loyal emperor, whatever, imperial officer, and then he has this fight with Forrest for some reason, but I never really quite understood why they were disagreeing, and then he takes over the ship, and then he loses control, and then he's having visions. It may be Brian or Michael, you can explain to me what's going on here, but I never understood what Archer was doing, especially when he was standing up on boxes or whatever in the cargo bay talking to like 20
the Avenger
crewmen.
Crew?
It's like, why are you talking to these people, and what are
he's
you
like
telling? And why are you like
troops?
Original movie? What's going on here?
I think the idea is that he's trying to give like a St. Crispin's Day speech, and it just doesn't work. I mean, I think Scott Bakula is. I don't think there's any question that he's a very good actor. There's something, I like the idea that I think they're going for, which is this. This guy with just a chip on his shoulder, where, you know, the Archer that we know is kind of unquestionably a great man. So the mirror universe of that is this guy who has more in him than other people, you know, give him credit for. And he's got this kind of chip on his shoulder to go, no, I'm a force to be reckoned with. And I, you know, you guys are going to have to deal with me, and I'm going to prove to be the badass that I know I am that none of you guys think. And I like that idea. There's something about Scott Bakula's performance that does not work. Like, I don't know if he's intentionally trying to ham it up and be more theatrical and almost kind of do a Shatner thing. Like, I'm Captain Kirk. I'm Captain Kirk.
Right.
I don't know if he's doing that on purpose or if he's such a nice guy that he just can't play evil or asshole. Like, he's just not capable of it. And I think, I mean, it's mostly on Scott Bakula because, you know, he has the most of that to shoulder. But I think by and large, none of the main cast can really like play that delicious kind of evil. Oh, I'm just having a ball, you know, chewing the scenery.
I think that's true. Yeah.
Like none of them really pull it off all that well.
And I think that's what was so great about DS9. And that's why they kept going back to the well, because Nana Visitor, Avery Brooks, all these people could do the mirror role so well, especially Avery Brooks. I mean, he can play everything. Because you never know what he's going to do next.
I think Nana Visitor always did a wonderful job. Like, she did. Just this like evil, seductress kind of, like, I never thought Kira was all that sexy personally as a character, but the intended is
the
sexy intended as hell.
Yeah. Right.
Well, you look at this and you're like, well, what's Mirror Travis really? Just say that to yourself. Mirror Travis.
Mirror Travis. Yeah.
What is the evil version of Mayweather? What is that? Like, I think it stems from the fact that, you know, to do that as an actor is a lot of fun, or at least it's supposed to be a lot of fun. And I think by and large, the DS9 crew had a lot of fun, or at least they were comfortable enough that when those episodes came along, they could have a lot of fun. And I just felt like, especially by this point in the show, the actors on Enterprise weren't having fun. It was just, you know, there's another phrase that we use on Down in Front that's kind of an industry phrase that's called a coffee and bagels movie, which is where, you know, something is so bad that when you're watching it, you're taken out of the story by how bad it is. Yeah. And you suddenly have this thought of somebody woke up at 5 o'clock every morning for months or years to make the coffee and the bagels for whatever this piece of crap is. Mm. And it's like, then you just feel bad for all of the people that put in all this hard work and got up early day in and day out for so long and then just produced this.
Yeah.
And that's, having worked on many of those kinds of shows myself over and over and over again, I can say it's can be a very demoralizing thing. And I feel, and this might be me projecting, but I feel like that might be what's coming through here, is at this point, everybody knows that this is not awesome. This is not a great show, that this is the weird, mutant stepchild of Star Trek that nobody likes. And so when this opportunity comes along to have a lot of fun, it's like, whatever, our spirits are already broken. Maybe that's me projecting, but that's kind of the impression that I get.
That may well be the case. I think, like, at the core level, though, there's something very, very wrong with Enterprise before any of that, like, happens. Like, no matter how broken a cast's spirit is or isn't, they're not going to be able to play the roles that you want them to play if a lot of them are miscast. And I think Enterprise was just miscast through and through. Whatever, you can make the case for and against that with each character, but really at the top is Scott Bakula, and he's so wonderful. Obviously, Quantum Leap, yada yada. But there's a show that nobody ever watched that I loved called Men of a Certain Age, which I've talked about on the podcast before, and nobody watched it, so it got canceled. Mm-hmm. But Scott Bakula did amazingly subtle and endearing and just charming work on the show, and I loved watching him work. So he's capable of wonderful stuff. He just, I don't really think he ever should have been Captain Archer. I think you hit it right on the head, Brian, when you said, I think he's too nice a guy. I don't think he can play these roles where he has to be this kind of bitter, hardened, somewhat prejudiced jackass some of the times. Yeah. You know, I don't think he can play flawed enough to do that.
And I think that stems back to the very root of the problem is that when the producers decided they were going to do Enterprise in the first place, they didn't know really what story they wanted to tell. They just knew that they wanted to trot out the Star Trek franchise, all the cardboard cutouts that we had already come to love already, and go, okay, this week it's going to be the Ferengi, and this week it's going to be the Borg, and this week it's the Mirror Universe. And it's like, they didn't have an actual, like, okay, we want to revisit this time period to explore this idea. And so, and that sort of thing has a trickle down effect in anything you create, any story you tell. You go, okay, this is the idea we want to explore. So this is the characters we need to explore that idea. And so, you know, okay, this is the kind of captain we would need in that situation. And then you trickle it on down. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think they never had that kind of centralized guiding. And they never found it because not everybody has it from square one, but you find it hopefully at some point. And I don't think they ever found it.
I do think, we're ragging on Enterprise a bit more than I find acceptable. I actually, especially at this point in season four, I'm liking the show. I'm enjoying where they're going. The Kirshar arc was really interesting. We talked about recently about the Augments arc, the Klingon arc. I think the show has found its footing. I think this was a lapse. This was them saying, you know what we could do? We could do a Mirror Universe episode and it'd be really fun. And I don't think it was the direction they should have put their energies. Well, apparently Enterprise is a show that you have to really, really focus and really try to make it the best show possible. And if you let yourself just have fun, it's really going to fall apart.
Well, you can have fun in different ways. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with Greg that I actually like Enterprise as a series myself, but I also see where it has failed along the way. Now, I think when Manny Koto came in, well, going back, Brian, to, you know, having a plan, I do agree that basically the studio did not want to have a break in Star Trek production, right? You want to just keep Star Trek going. So, okay, well, Voyager's going off the air. We need a new show. Because I, you know, Rick Berman has even said that he didn't want to jump straight back into another Star Trek series immediately like this. But the studio wanted, we have to have another Star Trek show because, you know, they hadn't gone full on wrestling yet on UPN
right.
or Top Model. So I think that in the very, very beginning of Enterprise, they're exploring the fact that it's unknown. Like I wrote a guide to Fight or Flight, and someone on Twitter tweeted me like, oh yeah, I never really liked Fight or Flight. I thought it was a, yeah, it just really didn't have anything to do with Star Trek. But I thought it showed how space was completely unknown to the humans at that point, and it showed that fear mechanism. And I feel like in the beginning they could have explored that, but then kind of quickly move into being more of a prequel to TOS as they started doing when Manny Koto came on.
Yeah,
I think if the first season had been more like the fourth season, and that had built, you know, second, third, we didn't have all this weird Zindi thing in the third season where it's kind of like, we've got to do something about ratings. What can we do? Well, why don't we just send them off on a voyage, you know?
We have to make some comments about 9/11. Do you?
Yeah.
Do you really?
Like, that was weird. But if it had been more like the fourth season from the beginning, and then we ran through, and then in the fourth season, they wanted to take this break and just do this Mirror Universe thing, I think it would have been a lot more acceptable, because you could have said, okay, yeah, you've been doing great Star Trek, leading us to TOS for 4 years. Go ahead, you know, take two episodes and just play.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It would have been different in that case.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know I rag on Enterprise quite a bit, and I agree that's, you know, by the fourth season, it finds at least somewhat of a footing that I can go, okay, I can watch this. And I actually have been watching season four since I rewatched In a Mirror Darkly. And going, okay, there's still a lot that I don't like here, but there's some good stuff too. The thing that I find personally very frustrating about Enterprise is because it seems like it should be tackling this one aspect of the idea and the theme of Star Trek that I'm more interested in than anything else, which is this idea of, okay, Star Trek tells us that in the future, we figure all of our stuff out. We figure out how not to be jerks to each other, and we figure out how not to be terrible people and to put all of the petty stuff behind us and, you know, chase our better angels, to quote Lincoln. And it's like, okay, that's the promise of Star Trek, that we get there at some point. So for me, the most dramatically interesting aspect to explore is, what's the actual transition from the screwed up, you know, a nut job thinks it's a good idea to walk into a theater at a premiere and blow a bunch of people away for God knows what reason. Mm-hmm. And that terrible world that we live in today, how do we get from there to this future where we've managed to figure all of that stuff out? Like, what's the actual transition?
Right.
And yeah. Enterprise, like the promise of the premise of Enterprise is to show the transition from our weird fucked up world to the fixed world, the better world of Star Trek. And it's Enterprise as any kind of expression of any thematic idea whatsoever just so completely and utterly falls down on the job of something that I was particularly interested in to begin with, that it's very frustrating for me. And that may be why I give Enterprise a harder time than I think most people do, because that's what I wanted to see, and they just didn't do anything with it.
Yeah, I think a lot of fans feel that way. All right, well, we have passed an hour.
We have.
Time, wow. So I think we should probably wrap up.
Oh,
so.
Wow, yeah, look at that.
Yeah, look at that. So, Michael, how about, do you have any final thoughts on this episode that we didn't cover?
Brian summed it up actually quite well there. This episode is indicative of Enterprise as a whole. But I will say what I said before and what Greg kind of inadvertently quoted me on a second ago. Like, I was enjoying Enterprise at this point, and I was annoyed at this episode for kind of screwing up its thing. It's kind of mojo that it had developed, a little bit of momentum it had. But the thing I will say to wrap up is that apparently I, and maybe all of you, are completely disconnected from the fans, Because
right.
The readers, this is from Memory Alpha, the readers of Star Trek magazine voted in A Mirror Darkly the best episode of Star Trek Enterprise in their 40th anniversary reader poll published in January 06.
And what a high bar that is.
Well, and then, I don't know how to pronounce this, but I do read the magazine sometimes, Cine Fantastique. Yeah. Magazine also named it, and the second part, In A Mirror Darkly Part 2, as one of their top 10 television episodes of 2005. And wow. The television critic for the New York Daily News called the two-parter the best hours of Enterprise yet. I don't get
again,
it.
Again, a terribly high bar.
I know. But,
well, yeah. I know. I think those guys are actually on the same page as we are. They may just not realize or have given enough thought. They saw the Enterprise. They saw Kirk's Enterprise, and they saw corners of Kirk's Enterprise that they had never seen before, and they went, "Yee!"
Yeah, that's and the thing. Go, I think
it's
we,
like,
yeah.
Here's the Gorn,
often
and here's this,
conflate fanboyism and actual viewership. And yeah, it's not.
And that's, yeah. I mean, yeah. That's, and they're two separate things. The story
very
is,
much so.
Yeah.
Is a mess, and it's a vacation that they didn't earn story-wise. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, it's like, oh, well, they went back to the Enterprise Bridge. That's amazing, and you could almost feel like Scotty and Kirk were there.
Yeah.
Not really, but it pushes those fanboy buttons that's
yep.
We all have.
Michael, that's exactly what I was saying earlier, that many people told me when it first came on, they were like, oh, did you see the episode this week? It was so amazing. That
yeah.
I think that's the same reaction.
I think that's the reaction that people are actually having. It's not, oh, that was amazing storytelling. It was amazing what Archer did, or the twist at the end. It's like, no.
He was wearing Kirk's pajama shirt.
Yeah, it was amazing that we saw Kirk's Enterprise again. And I really think that's the beginning and the end of it.
Top 10 hours of TV of 2005. There were 10 episodes of Lost in 2005 better than this.
Good
easily.
Point. Nice.
And so, that's one show, right?
So I don't know where they're coming from with that. It's nostalgia. But the thing is, it did. It worked on me until today. I think until I sat down and watched part two today, I was still gung-ho about these episodes. So this is actually one of the things I'd like if our listeners could write in. Go ahead, watch In A Mirror Darkly 1 and 2 again with fresh eyes. And really, let me know what you think about it. Because, I mean, maybe we're off base. Maybe we're coming at it jaded.
And pay attention to the story. Don't just pay attention to the visuals.
From the nostalgia.
Yeah, try to separate your reactions from the actual storytelling to the nostalgia is the perfect word. Going, oh, that's awesome set design. I can't believe they rebuilt all that stuff. Because those are two very distinct reactions and mindsets and ideas. And I think people are conflating the one for the other.
And while you're watching the episode, if you do choose to rewatch it, this is the last thing I will say. Any scene with Admiral Gardner shouting at the screen is just hilarious. I was stone sober watching this episode. I almost fell off the couch. That guy was yelling at the top of his lungs. And also, immediately before the Avenger explodes in the midst of the of that attack, apparently, if you're that, what is that Vulcan goateed guy?
Saval?
Alternate Saval. Has this like 3 seconds before the ship explodes, just decides to sit in the captain's chair and scream at the top of his lungs for no reason. Fascinating choices. Watch the show just for those moments. It's very
funny. The admiral is great though. He's like the grouchy police captain in a Navy show. Archer, turn in your badge and your gun.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us, guys. Before we go, Brian, tell everyone where they can find you.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at my name, which is Brian with an I, and then Finifter, Finifter. And then I'm a co-regular host on a podcast that my friends and I do called Down in Front, which you can find at downinfront.net. We used to do, and we still do on occasion, our alternate commentaries to movies. So we'll sit down and we'll watch a movie and we'll have a conversation during it. More lately, we've just been kind of more of a traditional podcast and doing various conversations about movies and the business. And because myself and all of my co-hosts, we work in the entertainment industry in various capacities. So we do that. You can also check out our forum, downinfront.net/forum, which is a very cool place with a lot of cool people and cool discussions going on. And you can find Down in Front on Twitter at Down in Front. And check it out.
Well, how about you, Michael? Where can people find you?
People can find me on the internet at two different Twitter accounts, the first of which is Captain Two Phones. It's Captain the number two phones, where I tweet about my day job reviewing mobile phones and tablets and other various elements of technology, culture, and stuff when I get ambitious. And when you want to find me talking more about Star Trek and occasionally maybe drunkenly philosophizing and then deleting tweets in the middle of the night, you can find me at Fats Rikerbeard, which is spelled like it sounds and makes about as much sense.
It's one of the great things about me being on the other side of the world from all of you is that I get to see those drunken tweets before you delete them. So.
I did. I think, I had a couple tweets the other night that I deleted.
You and I both were tweet deleters this week. Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. We got to lay off the hooch, man.
Well, we have our revolving Friends of the Show cast, and apparently Brian and Michael had never met before tonight. So I'm glad we finally had them on the show together, because to me, they're like, I mean, aside from like Charlene, they're like our main people that we always have on ever since the very beginning of the Ready Room.
Well, Brian's been around since the beginning of the Ready Room, and I think Michael is probably the number two on the list of most frequent appearances.
Yeah, so I don't know how they've managed to miss each other, but I'm glad we had them on together.
It was amazing,
It was great. The one thing I never got a chance to mention on the show, last week we talked about Admiral's uniforms.
Yeah, that's right.
How awesome were the Admiral's uniforms in this? They're like covered in like pins and I don't know whatever there's things on the shoulder. There's epaulets. That's one of those words I don't know. The little things on the shoulders, they were just covered with stuff. I was mesmerized every time an Admiral was on screen.
Well, the Admirals in the Mirror Universe, they just have their act together a bit more than those in the Prime Universe.
As little time as they spent, you know, scissoring, it's like they figured out where Linda Park's and Jolene Blaylock's abs were, and they just scissored above, and that's pretty much all they did to modify the female uniforms. But they did go all out for these Admiral's uniforms. So two thumbs up to the costume designers there.
Yeah, thank goodness they didn't take, say, for Forrest or Saval, they didn't, you know, scissor right above the abs for them.
Would have been fun just to see everybody wearing the sort of the belly shirt.
Everyone. Trip is an engineering wearing the belly shirt.
Yeah, you know, it's the 22nd century, you know, things are more equal.
And what even Mirror Porthos could have had like a little belly shirt. You know, people dress their dogs up.
We didn't talk about Mirror Porthos.
No.
Do you think Mirror Scotty transported Mirror Porthos into nothingness as well?
Probably. You know, some things remain the same, even in parallel universes. Yeah.
And you know, we find out in this episode that Archer becomes the Prime Archer becomes the president of the Federation.
That's right, yeah.
And so this kind of, I mean, spoils the ending. I mean, Archer's not going to die. We'd find out. I would have actually liked to see...
Prime Archer becomes the president of the Federation, so it doesn't mean that Mirror Archer cannot die.
Well, that's true. Well, that's what I'm saying. But back when we get back to Prime Universe...
Oh, okay.
We now know what Archer's fate is.
That's true, yeah.
I would have actually liked to see more of that, where Mirror Archer is, you know, he feels ambitious, but he's not really getting it done. And he feels such contempt for this Prime Archer guy who's like compassionate and a nice guy and Prime Directive and all that BS. But that guy becomes president. Like, that should be haunting Mirror Archer, I feel like. And I think they played with it a little bit, but I don't think they really nailed it to the extent they really could have.
Well, as we discussed in the future, I think you're asking a little bit too much of the writing in this episode to go there. But who knows what our listeners think? So if you want to share your thoughts on In a Mirror Darkly, did you love it? Did you think that it was one of the 10 best hours of television in 2005? Do you think it's one of the best episodes of Enterprise? You know, let us know. Just go to trek.fm/contact and send us a message through there. You can go to the show page for this show, which will be trek.fm/TRR58. And you could use the comment threads there, or you can hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. That's facebook.com/trekfm or username trekfm on Twitter. And let us know what you think. So, Greg, if everyone wants to find you on Twitter, where should they go?
Yep, they can follow me at Greg Harbin. That's GREGHARB as in boy, IN, where I'm hopefully having cheerful tweets. Because as was brought to my attention this weekend, most of my non-at reply tweets seem to be depressing or hiding some secret shame or passive-aggressively attacking someone. Apparently this is so. So I'm making a concerted effort to bring love and joy into your Twitter stream. So if I'm succeeding, please let me know. If I'm failing, definitely let me know. Because I want to raise the level. I want everyone to be happier and cheerful. Because I am. I'm a happy, cheerful guy. You know that, Chris. I'm the wine chugging. That's an occasional thing.
You know, the wine chugging photo got like 300-500 views on Facebook and maybe like a dozen likes, I think. So quite interesting. Well, that's very thoughtful of you, Greg, to, you know, take command of your Twitter stream in that way. So, all right. Well, if you want to find me on Twitter as well, you can find me, C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And I don't know, I'm tweeting about Japan and soon it'll be college football. And of course, I tweet about Star Trek. And you know, I don't really talk about my personal life online very much, what's going on. Although when I'm not feeling well, something's going bad, I will couch my feelings in Star Trek metaphors. So if you watch for those, you know, if I talk about a warp core breach or anything like that, it might actually be about some things going on. So anyway, you can find me on there. Of course, please go over to our website, trek.fm. You'll find all of our shows there. I've got a new Matter stream coming out. Finally, it's been quite a while. I interviewed the guys from Titled Sketch Project, and it's actually, Matter stream's usually very serious. This one is not serious. This one is quite funny, given that they are comedians. That's coming out. Of course, we have Deck 8 with Colin and Tom, now covering Star Trek Online every week. And you can find all those shows on the site there. And we're now in Stitcher as well. Deck 8 is in Stitcher. Of course, the Ready Room's there. Matter Stream is there as well. So you can find all of our shows. All right, Greg. Well, I'm going to head out. I'm going to go roam the corridors of the Defiant and see which other famous characters from TOS I can find hiding around.
All right, Chris. I think it's time to stick it in an agony booth because the Ready Room is done.
Ich bin ein Katsuda.